This episode is brought to you in part by Regent College, Vancouver, Canada. Experience God's call to a life more abundant with our 1 to 2 week summer courses. Sign up today at rgnt.net/summer.
Rachel Marie Kong, welcome to Viral Jesus.
There's a lot of confusion that surrounds grief and sad things because on the one hand, you're experiencing something as a loss. And so that is sad. It feels really sad. And yet you're not sure how to move on from that or if you should move on from that. And if you do move on, like, where do you move on?
From Christianity Today, this is Viral Jesus, a show about communication and the power of social connections, where we talk to some of the most influential Christian content creators to find out how they've made their faith go viral. Everyone I talk to on this show is someone I follow or was told to follow online. Most of the conversations you'll hear are with people I have never met in person, yet they've impacted how I think. What does it look like for Christians to enter the chat thoughtfully? Let's grow together on Viral Jesus. I'm your host, Heather Thompson Day. Hello, friend. Today we continue part four of our four-part series, Advice from a Woman. Today we sit down with Rachel Marie Kong. I love this girl. There is something, when you hear her voice, you're going to know right away. There's just something so peaceful about her energy. But before we get to that, are you ready for Social Toolkit? This is where we discover tips and best practices for entering the chat. Today, we check in with the man, the myth, the legend, Brady Shearer. Brady Shearer is the director of church software platform Nucleus. He trains churches on how to navigate the biggest communication shift in 500 years. So a few weeks ago, I think like two episodes ago, I was talking about YouTube being the second largest search engine and got several DMs from people saying, Heather, I need to start a YouTube channel. What do I need? Listen, I don't know very much about YouTube at all. I'm hoping you do, Brady. What do they need before they start a YouTube channel?
Biggest rule for video production is that audio always matters more than video. If your video quality is not as good as it could be, we're all forgiving as viewers. But audio quality needs to be crisp. And so that's something that most folks overlook. You consider, oh, straight to the video. Consider the audio first. A couple options for that. You know, I have a really simple Apogee Hype mic right now. I'm not in my normal studio filming and recording this podcast. This is just a USB mic that plugs right into my computer. And that's going to be good enough. In our podcast where we film YouTube videos there, I will use the Shure SM7B, which is closer to what Heather's using right now to record. And then in our dedicated YouTube studio, I have a mic that's actually out of frame. And this is my preferred approach to audio, where you would have a shotgun mic that's basically right above the camera frame pointed down at you. A shotgun mic is this really small cylindrical device, audio capturing device, sometimes known as a boom mic. If you think about television and film, you'd have a boom operator holding it over top of the talent as they talk on a long stand. So we just use like a typical church stand that you'd find, on stage at church to hold the mic. And that way the audio is crisp, but there's no actual microphone in the frame. You can also use, handheld mics. Both DJI and Rode have some good handheld mics that you can hold, or you can clip right onto your lapel, which will work nice and wirelessly can connect right into the camera. In terms of camera itself, so many great options that are affordable nowadays. I'm a big fan of the Sony cameras. They have cameras virtually at every budget, all the way down to like a Sony A6000 series that's, going to be sub $1,000, all the way up to, our peak cinema cameras are, many thousands of dollars, and we still use Sony for that. The nice thing about picking a single camera manufacturer is that you can stay with those lenses, and then as you progress and as you want to upgrade, you can keep the same lenses most of the time. And then the final overlooked quality is going to be lighting. The really simple way to do this is to get one light, point it on a 45 degree angle from you. That's going to create a flattering look on your face. But you know, if we're going to follow Gen Z trends, ring lights are out and it's all natural lighting. Now, if you're watching this right now, I have a door that's a giant window to my left, to the right of the frame. And that's kind of lighting up this side of the face. And I could, if I was using a camera and not just a crummy webcam right now, it would look a lot better. But natural lighting is totally useful. And we've used it many times exclusively. So those are kind of the three big components.
I love that. Microphone, lighting, camera. Brady, thank you so much for adding another tool to our social toolkit.
This episode is brought to you in part by World Relief, an organization that partners with the local church to serve the most vulnerable. Around the world, increased conflict, the lingering effects of COVID-19, and disasters caused by our changing climate have left millions of people in desperate situations. Many are fleeing their homes and are facing starvation, persecution, and more. These overwhelming challenges cause many of us to wonder, can I make a difference? The answer is simple. Yes, you can. When you join The Path, World Relief's monthly giving community, you partner with World Relief in bringing hope and transformation to the millions experiencing vulnerability around the world. And when you partner with your monthly gift by September 30th, your first year of monthly gifts will be matched dollar for dollar up to $25,000. Double the impact of your giving and visit worldrelief.org/viraljesus today.
So excited for you to hear my conversation with Rachel Marie Kong. Rachel Marie Kong is a New York native, born and raised just outside New York City. She holds a degree in English with creative writing and a minor in Bible. She is founder of The Follow House, and her writing has been featured in Christianity Today, Proverbs 31, She Reads Truth, all the things. Rachel is the author of Let There Be Art, and The Matter of Little Losses. Here is my conversation with Rachel Marie Kong. I love opening up these conversations by doing a little internet sleuthing and seeing what I can find online about the person that I get to sit down with. For you, Rachel, I found a post on your Instagram. I'm going to read a few lines of it. You say this: your grief isn't something to get over. To be honest, there is no getting over grief. There is no getting behind or above or beyond it. There is only remembering that you are not alone in your grief and that you are cradled even as you crumble. And then here's your last line: honor your grief, no matter how long ago it happened. Talk to us about that post and about that last line. I think it's something people probably need to hear, that they have permission to honor their grief no matter how long ago it happened.
Yeah, sure. It's kind of it's a really strong statement to make, right? To say that there is no getting over your grief, because I think that goes against just a lot of expectations that a lot of us hold, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, the more and more that I share this quote and that line, the more and more that I get feedback from people, specifically on Facebook. I think there's an older demographic there, honestly. And they share their stories of their husband or their wife that they lost many, many years ago, and how they're still grieving that, or how that loss still matters to them. It still impacts them. It still shows up in their everyday life. And I think there's just so much truth to that. It doesn't matter what it is, by the way, because it doesn't matter what it is, whether you lost a person, a place, a thing, and also like to give it the time that it needs, which we might carry our grief for a lifetime, you know? So, yeah.
I just know the Christian bubble so well, right? So it definitely feels like in Christianity, there is an expectation that in order to be holy or in order to be faithful, I have to move on. right? From pain or things that have really impacted me, or maybe pretend like it didn't really impact me. Where do you think that pressure in our system in particular comes from?
Well, I definitely think that the pressure in part comes from the truth of our faith, which is that we are a people that claim there is joy to be had. Mm-hmm. On the other side of this life, and also as we fellowship with one another and we fellowship with Jesus, that there is joy to be experienced here. And so I do think, however, it's very hard to carry the truth of that in the midst of, say, a person or a community is walking through grief,
yeah,
carries grief, because those two, they are like oil and water. It's like they don't mix. They're not the same. They're different. They're night and day, right? And so I do think that there's a tension there that comes from the fact that we are called to joy. We are a people called to joy, but yet the truth is there is still pain in this world. This world is still broken. It's not fully redeemed. We are not all fully restored. And so how do we ever lean into that tension authentically and honestly and comfortably, right? Because I think a lot of the part of the reason that a lot of us have a hard time with it is because it's just not comfortable, right?
Yeah.
To enter into someone else's grief and even to stay there for a while with them. So yeah, I think particularly in faith communities or, you know, this umbrella that we find ourselves in, it is very hard.
I'm thinking as you were talking, my mom, who her brother passed away when she was 18 years old, and she's in her 60s now. And I just remember she said to me one day at lunch, she said, "You never get over it. You just learn how to let joy sit beside it." And that is almost exactly what you just described, is how do we learn how to carry two tensions at the same time. How did you think about grief when you were younger versus how you think about grief and loss and what it means now?
Yeah, sure. That's a great question. I was just unpacking this in another conversation too. I think as a child, I myself, and maybe I'm speaking for someone else, but there's a lot of confusion that surrounds grief and sad things, because on the one hand, you're experiencing something as a loss. And so that is sad. It feels really sad. And yet you're not sure how to move on from that, or if you should move on from that. And if you do move on, like, where do you move on to that? Like, if you just lost a friend because you moved, as I explore in my book, or for other reasons, like if you've just lost a friend and now you're feeling or hearing that you should move on, well, how do I move on? Do I make new friends? Do I kind of move on and still hold on to these, you know, which is what I experienced in my story. I wrote about how I started writing letters as a way to kind of try to keep the line between me and my friends when I moved, right? Like, is that moving on in a healthy way? What does this look like? And so I think as a child, there was just a lot of confusion. And I think that's a natural thing too. I do think though, as time went on, I began to think, well, maybe I'm just pessimistic. I just, because I allow myself to feel sad about certain things, maybe I just see the bad in every situation, or maybe it's just my perspective, you know? Flash forward, you know, coming to the present, I look back and I commend little Rachel. I commend the child that I was that honored those feelings. And a lot of those came out in journals where I would just unabashedly share how I felt and what I was grieving and what was sad. Also what was hopeful and good, but a lot of times what was sad and what I was praying for or hoping for. And so I commend her. I think when I look back, I see that that was faith, honoring those moments that were hard and grieving and sad for me, you know?
Your latest book is called The Matter of Little Losses. And I can imagine that writing a book on grief would be challenging. And especially when you have to be open about things that maybe make you feel vulnerable, how were you able to begin exploring your own grief throughout writing it in a way that you know other people are now going to be invited to sit with me in it?
Sure. Yeah. So this is a great question because I never had it in the books to write a book about grief. Like
really?
That just wasn't in the cards. Yeah. So to do a little time traveling in 2020, 4 years ago now, I got signed to write two books. The first of which was already, you know, we knew what it was going to be on, art, creativity. And so that ended up being my first book, Let There Be Art. And the second book was TBD, to be determined. And so as time went on, you know, I had some ideas. My editor had some ideas of what I might write on next. And it wasn't until we were on a call and they had proposed to me that I write a book about grief.
Wow.
And that was because there's a post that's on my Instagram. I have it pinned to the top, but it says, "For the empty chair at your table."
Yeah, I saw
it. And so I essentially talk about, you know, the holidays. All of us have that empty chair at the table where someone is supposed to be there, but they're not because they're no longer with us. Mm. And how that's just a yearly reminder of how, you know, we miss someone that we love and how it's hard, right? Again, that joy and the grief.
Yeah,
we're having
yeah.
a celebration, a holiday, a feast, but yet there's the reality of, you know, we're missing someone. And so we just saw a lot of traction with that and a lot of resonation. And my team proposed, "You should write about grief. We think you could do it. We know you can." And so that kind of launched me into, okay, sure. I mean, I love being the person that kind of hangs out in the hard spaces. Mm. I love hanging out in ambiguity and gray matter, right? And so, and hard stuff like talk colors, like I love being in gray and black spaces where it's just hard and heavy, right? And so I was like, okay, great. I would love to do that. But what is my angle and how can I speak into this? And really, to make a long story short, the thought process that transpired was kind of similar to my first book in that I wrote about creativity and it was like, wait, really? Can I be the one to speak into this? But then looking back in my life, I've seen the breadcrumbs of where creativity was always a pursuit for me. Might not have been something that I was an expert at or excelled dramatically, but it was always a constant and steady pursuit of mine and passion. And therefore, absolutely, I can write about it. And so I saw a similar thing with grief and loss of like, wow, if I look back on my story, I can follow these breadcrumbs where I had really these moments that were hard and sad as a kid. And yet I leaned into that and I honored it and I made space for that through my writing, through my journaling, through my art. And how can I travel in time again and go back to these moments that I did work through, I have seen healing for, I have come to hope for, and kind of use my story as a map to help lead others through their moments of grief. And so that's why I'm so heavy with the storytelling. And I really sought to use my own story as a resource to lead people to grief, you know, to help them feel, to kind of evoke those feelings of grief and then to help them process their own, you know.
Rachel, I would love to hear a little bit more about what some of those stories are. I think what you're doing is very interesting because in general, as a culture, talking about big losses, we are doing better, right? Like there is more conversation about conversations on mental health or big moments where somebody loses somebody that you shouldn't just be expected to bulldoze through your life. But I don't think there's a lot of conversation on little losses, which is your focus, and how that can make it, because there's less conversation, it just almost becomes invisible and it's hard to grieve those things in a healthy way. So can you share with us maybe some of the stories that somebody might read in your book and how would you recommend somebody pay attention and honor the little losses in their life right now?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I love this question. And I'll start by, I always love to read excerpts when I'm on a podcast. So I'll read a moment.
We love it too. Do it.
It's so powerful and good. I'll read literally the first little section okay. from my first chapter, and then I'll talk about how that kind of transpired. So I say, I wonder if you know the secret of time travel like I do. Like I can sit here, unbudging, on a bare rug, looking strained into a framed sheet of silver-backed glass and going back years, some decades, back to that one cruel moment when life deeply broke me. A swell of ocean pools in my eyes. I lean in close to the mirror, and my memory takes me there, to that room with a casket and 100 gawking eyes, teary eyes. Someone, I can't remember who, motions for me to come. They want to cradle me from my crumbling, want to hold me as I hold my breath. I am 9 years old and crying because I do not yet know how to share air with a lifeless body unbreathing before me. So that intro, I literally remember where I was in my room. I was staring into a mirror and I was looking. I didn't know how to start this book. I sat for days. I was like, what is my entry point? Where do I start? And so I remember I just sat down before a mirror one day and looked at myself, which is such a hard thing to do, right? But I said, I looked and I think I gave myself the time and space to do what I wrote that I did is to time travel and to think back and to go back and to recall those memories. And so the memory that I'm talking about specifically there is the one that I have and remember of being at my grandmother's funeral, my paternal grandmother's funeral. And then later on in that story, so that's a big loss to lose a grandparent, right? To lose someone to death is a big loss. But then I use that memory to segue into and talk about how in the present time, adult Rachel, 35-year-old Rachel, you know, I was on Google and, you know, I live in North Carolina, but my home where I was born, I'm from New York. And so as I'm thinking about my grandma and writing about her, I go on Google, I look up the address of her house, which I still know by heart, and go to Google Maps or, you know, whatever it is, Google Images, and attempt to look at her house. And it's no longer there. It's gone. It was torn down and built over. And I mean, the last time I had been there when I was, you know, doing this research, it couldn't have been more than 5 years since the last time I visited. And so there I was in the middle of preparing to write this book. And here's another little loss that was kind of thrust upon me. And it was just, it was evidence for me. And I think it was proof to me, like, that these little things, losing a house, losing a grandparent's house that you grew up in, that matters, you know? Flash forward a couple months ago, I had another instance where my other grandmother, who's actually still living, like, we don't have her house anymore either. And I just, the sadness that I felt as, you know, I remember growing up as a little girl, wandering in the backyard and playing with my brothers out in the backyard and going into the creek with our bare feet and catching crawfish, you know? And so as we honor a little loss like that, and we talk about how, yeah, that house mattered. Yes, the memories that we have in that house mattered. How do we honor this? How do we move forward? How do we make sense of this? I think that's what my book attempts to do. And I leave a lot of these answers open-ended. You know, the ends of chapters, I give points of reflection and things that readers can remember. But really, my hope with this book was to, like, I'm going to tell you my story and use that as an entry point, but I want you, the reader, I want you to think about your memories. When you played in your grandmother's house, do you still have access to the house? Is it still around? Can you drive past it? Is it gone? And how does that make you feel? And I think just giving space for that is so sufficient, you know?
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, You want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Explore with me some of your thoughts on losing friendships, because I think that it's interesting, even as we're talking about it, right? So having these conversations makes invisible things more visible, because as we say it out loud, losing a good friend, right? Not necessarily that they passed away, but that the friendship is over. That actually sounds very big. But I would say in life, we tend to classify that as a little loss. And I have so many women that listen to this program, and I know just from the DMs that I get that that is often a pain point for a lot of women, is difficulties or things that have happened when you lose a friend or lose a relationship. What advice do you give to people about that?
Oh gosh, it's a disenfranchised grief. It's one that society, you know, kind of turns its head to.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think it is a big one, but it's one that we've labeled as little, mm-hmm. In that we haven't given as much space. Like, where are the practices?
Yeah.
When you lose a friend, where are the rituals? You know, and that's where, you know, I kind of look back at my story and I say, you know, in my one story, I saved all these Coke bottles from a moment that we all shared at my birthday party. When my friends left, I kept those Coke bottles. I think I was trying to make some kind of ritual to keep them close, you know? And so I think, you know, the first thing is just confessing and admitting and saying that you have a friend that you lost.
Yeah.
And that it hurts.
Name it.
Name it. Recognize, even though they still live, they're still, you know, they haven't died, they haven't passed away, but they live, and you two just live separate lives. That hurts. You know, it hurts because they carry a part of who you are. They know part of your story. You have memories together. And then I think, you know, there are so many little practices. Like, one that I explore in my chapter is writing letters. Mm. Maybe that looks like writing a letter to a friend as a moment of closure, whether or not they receive it or whether or not they'll write back. But maybe for you, that helps. Or maybe you just write a letter and you never send it. Maybe just writing out that letter can help you say all the things you wanted to say, but now you don't have that chance. You know, if I could have written one more chapter in my book, it probably would have been centered around things, material things. But I do think that holding on to and collecting things, there's a lot of power for reasons that we can't get into today, but things just have power. I think that if there is a tough relationship that someone is navigating, and maybe there's an object, maybe you could consider destroying that object or getting rid of it or finding a new home for it as a way to kind of like allow that friendship to have some sort of closure. Or maybe you still really care about that person and that you do have an object that maybe you want to give it a new place, and you do want to put it somewhere where you can look at it and think fondly of that person or pray for them or hope, you know, that maybe in another season this friendship will come together. You know, everyone's story is so different. But I do think finding rituals could be a really helpful, practical thing for someone who has lost a friendship.
You mentioned in the first chapter of your book, it takes bravery to be here. What would you say a listener needs to do in order to step into that type of bravery?
I'll give two things, because it's not always so easy to say, I'm going to step there myself. Like, I'm going to go there, right? So here are two things that could help someone step towards this brave act of looking at their grief. Doing it with someone who gives you the space to be who you are, isn't going to rush you towards resolution, but that will hold space with you. Maybe that's a friend or a family member. Maybe that's a therapist or a trusted leader. But whoever that is, they can hold your hand in this journey, you know, so to speak. And then again, you know, I literally make an argument for this in my book. And this is why I lead with story, not only my own, but stories from movies and books all throughout the book. These stories allow us to safely see from a distance what it could look like to be a person who goes through a conflict or a challenge and comes out on the other end, right? And so, for instance, say you're someone who is learning how to trust and make friends, right? You don't have a trusted friend. You don't have a friend for whatever losses came into your life. Well, I have a chapter for that. And I talk about Anne Shirley and Green Gables, right? And I use that story as a mirror so that we can all see ourselves. We're all wanting Diane Barry. Like, we all want that bosom friend, right? And that kindred friend. And so I do think that story fiction movies are a great way to tap into a topic like grief and to start to safely come to those shores so that you can grapple with your own story.
In the matter of little losses, you do this thing where you explore loss through a framework of the language of flowers. Can you tell us about what inspired you to do this approach and what it is?
Yeah, absolutely. So when it was finally decided that I would write a book about grief, I knew that, first of all, like logistically and literally, I knew I wanted a dark cover. Like, I was like really going to push my team. Like, let's go black. I want a black cover, you know? It's just like, that's the space that I like to be in. And so I just knew though that for something as heavy and as hard as grief, you have to counterbalance that with something that is light and beautiful. And I immediately knew it's got to be flowers. It's got to be floral. The language of flowers, it's such a universal language. We all love flowers. We all kind of put our own meaning to them and interpretations to flowers or memories to flowers. And so I just knew right away that from the cover to the internal design and even just the framework of how I would kind of guide this work, I thought that flowers would be something that would resonate with everyone. I also have a lot of other reasons as to, like, I'm a little bit of a literature nerd. And so I talk a lot about Ophelia from Shakespeare's Hamlet and her flower speech and how in her flower speech that she gives towards the end of the play, like, she literally names her griefs and, you know, the offenses of others. She literally puts specific flowers for each of those because in Victorian times, flowers had specific meanings and you would use that as a way to kind of communicate secretly how you were feeling. And so I just saw something there. It's like, this could be fun to explore. And so I just went for it.
Faith obviously can be transformed in grief, and faith can also help us navigate our grief. How has your faith helped shape the way you process through loss?
I think that I have found a lot of freedom in my faith, I would say, in this current time that I'm in, this current age, this current season. I see exploring loss and the hard things as just an expanded faith. Like, I feel freedom to do that. I feel like it's not a curse. It's not a bad thing. I'm not going to wander away, that there's freedom and welcome to do that. I think that as a younger girl, like I said, there probably would have been this thought of like, oh, I'm just pessimistic, or I'm like, I'm doing it wrong. Like, I'm not supposed to focus on these things. I should shove this away. I should hide these things. I shouldn't feel this way. I should be good. You know, I should think about good things. And so I'm really glad that I'm at this place in my faith where I do feel the freedom to go down a certain path, to work through a memory, to stay there for as long as I need to, you know, to unpack it and then to consequently, like, welcome in the light and welcome in grace and healing for however long that takes, you know?
What is your hope for somebody right now who is dealing with little losses? What is your hope for them as they pick up your book?
That they feel seen and feel heard. that even before they get to a point of admitting what their loss is or sharing the details of it or going on their own journey of healing and exploration, that the very first thing that they feel or see or sense is that they are seen and heard. And I do believe with all my heart that that is an entryway. That is a way of welcome for people to begin their own healing journeys, is when they feel seen and feel heard.
Rachel Marie Kong is the author of The Matter of Little Losses. Friend, what are you waiting for? You can get this book wherever books are sold. Rachel, our show is called Viral Jesus. Here's the last question I ask everybody who comes on the show. What do you think it means to be a Christian when we are online?
Oh my goodness. I think, man, I have so many thoughts about this. I think about this all the time. I mean, I don't know. All of us are only at the cusp of unpacking that question.
Yeah. Because
social media is still so new.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. Even though that we've had all these developments in the last couple of years, it's still so new. And I'm so, so curious about it. And I try more so to be curious than annoyed or frustrated.
Yeah.
Or I think that there is so much good. I even wrote about this in my first book. I really do believe that there is good, even when it doesn't feel like that in the social media and online world. And so, gosh, to be a Christian, to be a believer, I think it looks like listening, maybe talking more than listening. I think it looks like trying to figure out what community looks like. I've always been curious about community in the online spaces, not just, I don't want to show up for content. I struggle all the time. I'm like, is this what I want? Like, what do I want to do? How do I want to be here? I want community. I'll share one thing that's been on my mind lately. My grandfather, we lost him in 2021. I write about him a lot in both of my books. We lost him to COVID. And it turned out that after he passed, there were, my grandfather was the kind of guy that could like talk your ear off, and he certainly would. And that very well was a little bit, you know, we were all like, okay, it's time to, but he could spin a sentence with a stranger, any stranger. And it turned out that after he passed, I'm going to like tear up. We had people coming out of the woodworks saying that he would send them messages on Facebook. This old man using Facebook to check in on people and to say, how are you doing? How can I pray for you? What do you need? Toilet paper, water. That people were coming out of the woodworks, people that we didn't even know, that would say, Lewis gave me money for this bill.
Wow.
Don't know you. And I think about that a lot. I've been thinking about that often as I juggle having two kids at home and I'm an author. I show up in the online space for my own writing and for the sake of cultivating my own community. Mm-hmm. And I work in social media, my separate job. I work in social media. Mm. And so I'm constantly evaluating, how do I want to show up in this space? And that story of my grandfather is lately what has been, I'm like, My feed might be empty. My stories might be empty for days without end. My publishers are probably like, where did she go?
Yeah.
Right? But guess what? You better believe I'm showing up in my DMs.
Hmm.
And there are people that I know their full stories, or they're starting to tell me their stories through their DMs. And I will make space for that. Absolutely. If it means encouraging someone towards the light and towards the truth, that they are seen and loved and believed and cared for.
Rachel Marie Kong is the author of The Matter of Little Losses. You can get it wherever books are sold. Rachel, it has been an honor to have you.
Honor is mine. Thank you.
So what can we learn from my conversation with Rachel Marie Kong? Number one, your grief isn't something to get over. Honor your grief, no matter how long ago it happened. Number two, loss is not just relegated to big losses. We experience little losses too, and those matter. Number three, faith can both transform grief and be transformed by grief. We can honor our suffering without dishonoring God. Viral Jesus was brought to you by Christianity Today. I've been your host and creator, Heather Thompson Day, producer and audio engineer, Lauren Joseph, and executive producer, Ed Gilbreth. Please review and recommend us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Next week, we are sitting down with John Michael and Jacob Volk and talking about the porn industry and what it means for Christians. You are not going to want to miss that episode. I'll see you next week for another conversation where a viral Jesus guest talks and you and I listen so we can learn. I love growing with you on Viral Jesus.